You are listening to The Point from MC3 in Lewistown, Pennsylvania. Check us out on the web at mc3church.org or find us on Facebook at mc3church. MC3, it's like nothing you'd expect.
Well, some of you were here and able to be a part of my little cooking experiment. I made some ranch dip, and by made I mean I opened the container and poured it into some bowls. And I gave you a carrot, and we have lots more carrots here. So if you're feeling like you want to eat one, you can. But I had you choose, and again, I'm kind of sharing this for the benefit of the people online as well, or if you kind of showed up a little bit later. But I gave everybody one carrot, choose your bowl, A, B, C, or D. So just out of curiosity, how many of you chose bowl A? Bowl A, all right, put them up there. Okay, I can kind of see that. Okay, how many of you chose bowl B? Bowl B. Bowl B, okay, put your arms down. How many of you chose bowl C? Bowl C, okay. All right. So my question is, now you put your hands up, how many of you felt like it tasted good? Raise your hand. Okay, put your hands down. How many of you felt like it did not taste good? Okay, all right, just out of curiosity. Okay, good. So what happened here is that there were three, it was one dip, but I decided to, you know, mix it up a little bit. And I used to do this growing up, like when I was at home. I don't really understand how to cook. My kids, actually, they understand. My wife understands the science of cooking and all the good things that go with that. And I don't. So I'm like salt and pepper, right? And I mean, it makes me want to sing some songs. Anyway, but I'm not going to do that because I decided just to add some salt and pepper to these. And so if you had A... Oh, so raise your hand if you had A. Okay, you had regular old ranch dip. So if you didn't like it, sorry, that's just blame it on the dip people. If you had B, raise your hand if you had B. All right, B, there was probably a cup of salt added to that. If you have a sodium issue, right now go to the ER. At this point. So if you tried B, now is time to leave. And then if you tried C, of course, that was extra pepper, lots of pepper, and for fun we threw some cayenne in addition to the black pepper in it. So it was extra peppery. And for those of you, so here's the deal. I could almost tell without looking, I could tell which one you ate, because as soon as you dip the salt, you're like that, okay? The pepper one, if you did A, you were like, oh, it's not bad. It was kind of good. The pepper one, people were like, oh, it's not bad. And then I walked away. But then I'm pretty sure that you're going, because it just gets you in the back of the throat. It's not even spicy. It's just uncomfortable. It just wasn't good. But the issue here, and I'm not a professional chef, despite my hat. I am not a professional cook, professional chef. And so one of the things that I know is true, we do watch cooking shows, and I actually consult with my family when it's time to make something taste good. But a good chef always tastes their product. A good chef always tastes their product, preferably with a clean spoon and not one they've already used and tried it again multiple times. But they always taste their product because then they can determine, no, it's a little bit bland, so it needs a little more salt. A good chef will taste and be like, it doesn't have quite enough kick to it. It needs a little more pepper. And a good chef will always be able to tell when it needs a little more salt and when it needs a little more pepper. And honestly, right now it would be great if we had like the dancers come up on stage, Kirk with his bull outfit and dance. But we're not going to do that. But anyway, sorry, it just keeps coming back to me. But a good chef knows that because they're sensitive to their dish. They're sensitive to, okay, you know what, this is good with salt, but maybe a little pepper. Or maybe they'll just say, you know, it's option A, it's good as it is. And so they don't add anything to it. But a chef is aware of whether it needs salt or pepper, salt or pepper. We'll put some pepper in it, please. Okay. And they know that because they're sensitive to the dish. And if you know anything about cooking like I do, you know that a good dish has a little bit of both. You can't have all salt, or it might taste like option B. You can't have all pepper, or it will taste like option C. And so this morning, as we continue this ampersand series, we're talking this week about the idea of grace and truth. And what we're going to see, the point this week, is that sensitivity navigates the tension between extending grace and speaking truth. And again, if you haven't been here so far for this series, an ampersand, that's the technical term for that picture, that object, that symbol, I should say. But we call it just and. And we're looking at things in this series that seem to be opposites. But the reality is both of them are important. And as we use this phrase, tension is the key. It's not a matter of balance. Because balance doesn't always work. Some dishes need more salt and less pepper. Balance wouldn't always work. And even in these decisions, it's not a matter of I need to be exactly grace and I need to be exactly truth, because it's a tension. Sometimes you need this, sometimes you need that. And the guitars are further away from me now. But a guitar string, it's under tension. You need that tension. A suspension bridge, it's under tension. You need the tension. If you got rid of one side or the other, you wouldn't have it. And so these are tensions that we need to navigate. And so the way we navigate between extending grace and speaking truth is through this idea of sensitivity. When is it time to add a little bit of salt? When is it time to put in a little more pepper? When do we need to extend grace? And when is it time to speak truth? And so let me just clarify one thing here. I need to take this off. When it comes to just for today and for your prime groups this week as you discuss this topic, here's what I mean by extending grace. And again, just for context to kind of keep our focus here. Grace means an undeserved gift. Anything that you receive that you do not deserve, that is grace. Our salvation, our hope in Jesus was not based on anything that you or I have done. It is an undeserved gift. And so grace is this idea of giving someone an undeserved gift. But in the context for today, just to help you understand where this tension lies, when I say extending grace, I'm saying, for lack of a better word, that we're talking about overlooking, and I've got that in quotes, overlooking sin. Not that sin isn't a part of it, not that sin doesn't matter, but there's a point where we say, you know what, I'm going to extend grace to you, I'm going to overlook the sin in this moment because it's an undeserved gift, because of the grace that God has given us, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. And then when we talk about speaking truth, what we're talking about over here is the idea of calling out sin, of saying, like, no, that's a sin, you're wrong, or you're in doing something that is not appropriate, that is not honoring to God. So again, those words, extending grace and speaking truth, those phrases mean a lot, but just for our context today, we're talking about the idea of kind of overlooking sin. And again, not ignoring it, not that it doesn't exist, but just saying, I'm going to look past that for this moment, and you'll see what that means in a bit. And then speaking truth is the idea of calling out sin, confronting, addressing sin. So we're going to turn on the house lights here, and we're going to look at this passage that we're going to come back to in John chapter 8. And we're going to be looking at verses 3 to 11. If you have a paper Bible, you can turn there. If you have YouVersion, John is about two-thirds of the way in your list there. And if you want to, like, physically bookmark, because you can do that in YouVersion, we're going to come back to this. But I'm just looking at verse 11 right now. And this is Jesus talking to this woman who was caught in adultery. And we'll come back to that in a little bit. But I want you to see his response to this woman. Basically, no one was willing to condemn her for her sin. And spoiler of what's going to happen there. But Jesus says to her, he says, neither do I condemn you. And so this woman who, and again, we'll come back to it, but this woman who clearly had done something wrong, who clearly had violated the law of the Abrahamic covenant, the Mosaic law, the Mosaic covenant, had violated that law, the Old Testament, the Old Covenant, and just, you know, even today, like, we're not cool with adultery. So even though she had done something wrong, Jesus says, I'm not going to condemn you. And again, we'll come back to it. But then he says, go now and leave your life of sin. So he on the first hand, says, I'm not going to condemn you. He extends grace to her when she deserved death. But then he says, now go now and leave your life of sin. Stop sinning. He speaks truth, saying what you're doing is wrong. You need to stop. And so you have Jesus here in this instant navigating that tension between extending grace and speaking truth, and how both of them are essential. So let's just look at a bunch of passages, and you're going to have a chance in your prime groups this week to chew on them a bit more. But first of all, let's look at some passages about extending grace. And there's plenty more in here in the Bible, but here's just a few key ones. The first one is found in John 1, and I want you to notice there's an asterisk behind a couple of these verses, because we're going to look at them twice, because they actually kind of talk about both issues. They talk about both sides of the situation. And so in John chapter 1, this is the very first chapter talking about Jesus, and Jesus, just for context, has been known as the Word. John is using Jesus and the Word in capitals as the same person. And so John writes, "The Word became flesh and made his dwelling among us." And we talk about this at Christmas time a lot. "We have seen his glory, the glory of the one and only Son." So this Son, this Jesus, has the glory that is coming from the Father, and he is full of grace. So Jesus is full of grace. And then John kind of shares a little John, the author, the disciple, shares about John the Baptist. He's a little parenthetical, I can say that word, comment about Jesus. And then he says there, "Out of his fullness, we have all received grace in place of grace already given." It's just kind of overflowing. And he says, "For the law was given through Moses, but grace and truth came through Jesus Christ." And so we've got this Jesus. John is kind of setting up his gospel story with the announcement of this one that was coming from the Father, that was Word became flesh. He dwelled among us. God became human. And this God that became human was full of grace. And that grace came through him, through Jesus Christ. Then over in Romans chapter 10, Paul writes to the church that he planted in Rome, and he says, they didn't know that God's power makes people right with himself. God's power makes people right with himself. They tried to get right with God in their own way, but they didn't do it in God's way. And he's talking about people that were trying to be good enough and do enough to earn their way to God. And Paul says here, and there's multiple times that he says this, Ephesians chapter 2, verses 8 and 9, he talks about it as well. But he says, you know, they were trying to earn their way, trying to do enough to get back to God. And he says that they didn't do it in God's way. So what is the way? He said Christ has fulfilled everything that the law was meant to do. So Christ did all the stuff. So now everyone who believes can be right with God. It's not about what you do. It's not about how good you are. It's not about how sinless or sinful you are. It's about believing. And that is grace. That Jesus came to extend grace to us, not because we can do enough good things to earn our way, but because Jesus fulfilled all of it. And that was grace, undeserved favor, overlooking our sin. Actually, he didn't overlook it. He took it on himself. So then over in Luke 23, we've got another passage. And this is, I think this is one of the most incredible passages in the Bible. Because if you run into people who kind of feel like we need to be good enough, that we need to earn our way to God, which biblically, like, it's a really hard argument to make. But you can go right to this passage and solve the discussion right away. Or people that think, well, I have to act this way. I need to follow these rules. And then I'm going to be closer to God. And that's how I'm going to get to heaven, by being good enough. I go to church enough. I read my Bible enough. And then I'll get to heaven. This passage kind of blows it out of the water. And it takes place at the crucifixion. And it says, when they, meaning Jesus and the soldiers, came to a place called the Skull, also known as Golgotha, they nailed him to the cross. They nailed Jesus to the cross. And the criminals were also crucified, one on his right and one on his left. So that's kind of the setting for the story here. Jesus is on a cross, and on the two sides of him, there are also a criminal on each side of him. Three crosses, Jesus in the middle, criminals on both sides. And then the little spot there, the ellipsis in the middle, one of the criminals is like, oh, you're the Messiah, why don't you get down and save yourself, save us too, and ha-ha, making fun of him. And it says, but the other criminal protested, don't you fear God even when you have been sentenced to die? He says, we deserve to die for our crimes, but this man hasn't done anything wrong. So the criminal recognizes the one, like, I'm getting what I deserve. I would prefer if I didn't get what I deserve. I hope that I had gotten away with it. But here I am, and I'm getting what I deserve. Jesus didn't do anything, and he's here with us. But then here's the crazy part. He says, then he said, Jesus, remember me when you come into your kingdom. He says, Jesus, I would like to join you in eternity. I want to go to heaven. And clearly, there's a sense of belief here. He understands who Jesus is as the Messiah. He is one that hasn't done anything wrong. And so he says, remember me. Can I get to heaven, Jesus? And if you're like maybe a lot of people in the church today, or maybe outside of the church, you would say, sure. First of all, what you need to do is go and solve that. Remember how you were talking about that person? You need to go apologize to them. And remember that other person that you stole stuff from? Give that back to them. And you clearly haven't been, contextually, you haven't been to synagogue in a while. You need to go to synagogue at least 10 times. And have you been carrying around your scroll of the law? Because do all those things, and then you can get to heaven. This man's hanging on a cross. He's got hours, and he can't get down. And Jesus replied, I assure you, today you will be with me in paradise. So here's a guy that had no opportunity to do good, and yet through his faith, he was going to be with Jesus in eternity. We'll see him in heaven if we're a follower, if you believe in Jesus. And so it's just a beautiful example of grace. Like, there was nothing that guy could do. And Jesus says, all right. And, you know, maybe if you were the one, let's say it was your daughter that criminal number two killed. And criminal number two is on the cross because he killed your daughter. I don't think you would be too thrilled about the grace that Jesus extended to him. Why? Well, he shouldn't be in heaven. He shouldn't deserve that. But that's what grace is. It's overlooking. It's looking beyond that sin and offering something that is undeserved. Then over in Luke 15, and the song this morning we just wrapped up with, come as you are, come forward, don't worry about who you are, give your life as you are, as Kirk prayed, my notes again. Come, offer yourself. And that's the story in Luke 15 that you're probably familiar with, even if you never went to church before in your life, the story of the prodigal son. And so there's the story, and I'm going to quickly sum it up. But this son comes to his dad, a younger brother, and says, Dad, can we pretend like you're dead? Can I just have my stuff, my inheritance now? Which, again, was such, literally, that's what was going on. It was a huge insult. Dad, I want my share of the inheritance now. He's like, but I need to be dead for you to get that. I don't care, Dad, give it to me. Then he takes it. His dad gives it to him. He goes off and squanders it. He wastes it. And he gets to a spot where he's got nothing left, and there's this huge famine in the land. Nobody is able to eat anything, and he's working at a pig farm, and he sees the pigs eating pods, pig pods. I don't know what a pig pod is, but that's what they're eating. And he was saying, like, man, those pigs have it good. They're eating some, excuse me, some good stuff. And he's like, what am I thinking? If I go home, you know, Dad is not going to accept me back as a son. I've already ruined all that. But maybe I can go and say, Dad, hire me on. Let me be one of your servants. And I can kind of earn my way back. I can work it off. I can work off this debt. You know, your servants, the people that work in your house, that work for your employees, they eat well. And he says, I'm going to go back to Dad and say, Dad, look, I've screwed it all up. I'm not going to be your son. I get that. That ship has sailed. But can I at least maybe work off this debt a little bit? And so he returned home to his father. And while he was still a long way off, his father saw him coming. Filled with love and compassion, he ran to his son, embraced him, and kissed him. His son said to him, speech ready to go, Father, I have sinned against both heaven and you, and I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Shut up, shut up, shut up. No. He said to his servants, quick, bring the finest robe in the house. Get the nice cloak out, because, you know, we all got the nice cloak. Come on, bring it out. Get it out for him. You know, that really nice soft robe that he stole from the hotel. I mean, no. Bring it, put it on him. Get a ring for his finger, which is a really cool thing because a ring wasn't like, oh, cool, you get to have some bling, you know. It was actually a signet ring, which was a family seal. And so in that moment, getting that ring, Dad was saying, you're part of the family, son. You're in. And he says, go ahead and give him sandals for his feet. We're going to kill the calf we have been fattening. We've been waiting for a special occasion, and it's time to break out the good calf. And he says, we must celebrate with a feast, for this son of mine was dead and is now returned to life. He was lost, but now he was found. And I love how the NLT puts it. So the party began. And see, the son was looking to earn his way back, but the father said, no, I'm going to extend grace. You don't deserve this. You've ruined it all. But I'm not just going to say, welcome back. You can live in the basement. He's saying, you get the full rights and privileges, and we're going to celebrate with a feast. That is extending grace. Wanderer, come home, because you're not too far. And then over in Romans chapter 5, we've got this passage. It also has an asterisk. 5-6, Paul writes this: God's law was given so that all people could see how sinful they were, which we could talk about that, but we don't have time for that right now. But the point is that if there wasn't a standard of rules, you wouldn't know if you're breaking them. And that's kind of the idea here. But as people sinned more and more, as they realized how sinful they were, he says, God's wonderful grace became more abundant. So just as sin ruled over all people and brought them to death, now God's wonderful grace rules instead, giving us right standing with God and resulting in eternal life through Jesus Christ our Lord. He says, look, every time, because of the law, we know how sinful we are. We realize when there's standards, we don't measure up. And every time we don't measure up, instead of God saying, ha ha, sucker, no, you just get more grace. And so wait, but then what if I do the same thing again? You get more grace. And more grace. And more grace. So that every sin has been covered through Jesus' death on the cross. Simply through belief in what he has done for you. Not by earning it. Not by doing it. And so Paul is saying to the church of Rome, look, man, you can't out-grace God. You can't out-sin God. His grace won't work. Every time you screw up, there's just more grace. It's like an everlasting pool of grace because of that. But that's grace. And so you've got all these passages, and again, there's so many more. You've got John 1, Romans 10, Luke 23, Luke 15, Romans 5. Just a bunch of passages, and the Bible is full of so many more. I already referenced Ephesians chapter 2. But let's kind of jump over. So we're over here in the extending grace side, overlooking sin and how God did that for us. How he's done it repeatedly for us and continues to do it for us. Well, now we're over here and we're going to look at speaking truth. And here is kind of calling out the sin, addressing the sin that is in the lives of others. And that's kind of where we're looking here. And we can look at our own lives too. That's certainly a good place to start. But we're going to look at John 1 again. And again, this is how John opened his gospel, setting up the story of Jesus coming on the scene. We already read that. Word became flesh, made his dwelling among us, seen his glory, the glory of one only Father, the Son, came from the Father, full of grace and truth. Jesus was full of grace and full of truth. So he didn't kind of water down the message. He didn't go like, yeah, that's okay, it's not that big of a deal. No, it was a big deal. He died for it. It was the worst agony that God could ever suffer. And he, in that moment on the cross, his Father even turned his back on him. We don't have time to talk about that either. But it was an awful thing. So Jesus didn't ignore the truth. He spoke the truth. And then a little later it says that the law was given through Moses. Grace and truth came through Jesus Christ. So Jesus is full of grace. And Jesus is full of truth. Both. Ampersand. Then we see that in Ephesians chapter 4, Paul writes to the church in Ephesus. And I think this is a really good example of speaking the truth. He says, then we will no longer be immature like children. We won't be tossed and blown by every wind of new teaching. We will not be influenced when people try to trick us with lies so clever they sound like the truth. He's talking to the church in Ephesus and said, you guys, people are teaching stuff that's wrong. And you're just kind of going along with it. You're letting other people go along with it. You're seeing that someone is going down the wrong path. And you're like, I don't want to get anybody mad. I don't want to offend anybody. I don't want to, have to change how I vote. Like, we have all these things tied into that. But Paul says, but instead of getting tossed around, we will speak the truth. And the key here is in love. Speak the truth in love, growing in every way more and more like Christ, who is the head of his body, the church. Speaking the truth in love. And speaking the truth is truth. Speaking the truth is not always pleasant. And, you know, if I were to speak right now about homosexuality and share what I believe the truth is from the Word of God, people would be like, I'm so offended. But if I would also go over here and say, stop lying. Stop lying to people. That's true, too. We don't seem to get offended by that. I don't know. Maybe it's just because it's easier if it's not our problem. Or if I said, do your words build people up always? Because if not, you're sinning. And all of that comes back to doing it in love. And that's, we'll get to that in a little bit. That's probably where this side gets so offended about some of this stuff, because it's not done in love. But speaking the truth in love, calling it out. And it is, and it's in love, because if I don't, and if you don't do this for me too, I'm not saying like, oh, I'm up here, I'm superior. I'm higher than you because I'm on a platform, and some of you I'm still not taller than. But speaking the truth isn't just something that I do, it's for your benefit. And as parents, we do this for our children. Discipline isn't pleasant, but we do that because we want them to grow. We want them to be on the right path. And so ignoring the truth doesn't help anybody. So anyway, that's what Paul's saying, is we need to speak the truth in love, and then we're going to grow to be more like Christ when we do that. In 1 John 1:8, here's another passage. John, same guy that wrote the Gospel of John, he wrote three letters, 1 John, 2 John, and 3 John. And he says here in 1 John 1:8, he says, if we claim to be without sin, we deceive ourselves, and the truth is not in us. So again, John is equating the idea of deception and sin as an opposite of truth. So truth means that we recognize that we're sinners. Truth means that, we see the sin in us and we see the sin in others as well. And if we ignore the truth, we're just deceiving ourselves. We're just tricking ourselves, lying to ourselves. And then over in Luke chapter 19, we see this story. And I'm going to kind of, I guess I'll just read it. If you grew up in church, you had a fun song to sing about it. When Jesus reached the spot, he looked up and said to this guy up in the tree, Zacchaeus, come down immediately. I must stay at your house today. So he gladly came down at once and welcomed him. So he came down at once and welcomed him gladly. And all the people that saw this began to mutter, Jesus has gone to be the guest of a sinner. And so Jesus saw this guy, and he was a tax collector. He was not liked by the people. And Jesus says, I'm going to your house. And that was like, what? Nobody is around those people. Nobody hangs out with those people. They are awful. And so Jesus right there was extending grace. But then Zacchaeus stood up and said to the Lord, look, Lord, exclamation point. Look, Lord, here and now I give half of my possessions to the poor. And if I have cheated anybody out of anything, I will pay back four times the amount. And Jesus said to him, today salvation has come to this house. And so the issue here with Zacchaeus is that grace was given to him, and what did he respond with truth? I'm a tax collector, and I have cheated people, and it's time to get right. And he doesn't even say, I'm going to do it later. He says, right now, I'm going to make this right. So the truth, the grace influenced the truth in his life, where he dealt with his sin, which is why people didn't like the tax collectors. One, that they were working on behalf of Rome, and no one liked Rome if you were a good Jewish person. But also because most of the tax collectors, if the tax was 8%, they'd charge 10% and keep 2%. And so Zacchaeus recognized truth in that moment, saying, no, I'm going to fix this. I'm going to make this right. And then over in Romans 5, we already looked at this. Paul said that the more we sin, the more grace we get. The more we sin, the more grace we get. The more we sin, the more grace we get. Keep on sinning, keep on gracing. It keeps coming. And so, if you were like me, and I think Paul's audience in Rome would be like, oh, well, that's how it works. I can keep sinning and doing the wrong thing, and I'll even get more grace. I get more of Jesus by doing more bad things. And so Paul says, well then, should we keep on sinning so that God can show us more and more of his wonderful grace? Of course not. Since we have died to sin, how can we continue to live in it? Paul's like, no. You get the grace, but it's not a license just to continue to sin. Deal with your sin. Grow. Get better. Put those things behind you. You don't have to live that way anymore. But don't just be like, I'm going to keep doing this because it's cool. No, Paul calls out the sin. Says, no, we're going to stop sinning. We're going to do our best to let the Holy Spirit shape us and change us to be more like Jesus so that we are not sinning. And we're still going to receive the grace when we mess up. But it's not a matter of doing it on purpose. So it's truth. So we've got this extending grace, and now we've got speaking truth. This tension here between the two. And again, we're looking at what does that look like for other people? And I guess you could look at yourself in the mirror, but a lot of times it comes to our relationships with others. When a person is in front of me, when a person that I deal with, when it's a relative, when it's a friend, when it's whatever, when it's someone that cuts me off in traffic, whether it's a coworker, whomever it is, we have an opportunity to respond in that moment. And how do we respond? Do we respond by extending grace or speaking truth? And the issue here is that we can't say, you know what, this grace thing is really cool. Let's keep doing the grace thing. Grace makes people happy. Happy is good. But get this, listen to me. Happy people go to hell. Happiness doesn't get you to heaven. The truth of the gospel, of what Christ did for you, is what gets you to heaven. And so, you can't just say, let's just hang out on grace and ignore truth. Then there's other people like, oh, I'm going to tell them like it is. You sinners, you're acting like sinners. And you people, these people in this world, have you seen them out there on the streets? They're swearing, they're watching stuff they shouldn't do. They're voting for things that I don't agree with. They're calling out stuff that is just wrong. Those people are going to hell. You're going to hell. Yeah, all of you out there. Aren't you glad we're in here where it's safe? And if that's speaking truth, if that's the truth that people hear from the church, God hates fags. Is that the truth that people are hearing from the church? The church has had a great, wonderful history of screwing things up. It's because we're all sinners. But we need to be careful that the truth doesn't ignore the grace. So, how do we deal with that? Sensitivity. Sensitivity navigates that tension. Sensitivity says, okay, is this situation require a little more grace? Well, maybe a little more truth. Yeah, truth this time. It's being aware of the situation, aware of the person, and we're going to look at that here in a moment. So first of all, let's talk about tasting the food. That's what a good chef does. Taste the food. Sensitive. What is the situation that I'm dealing with right now? How do I respond to this situation? That's what we've been saying all series long, like, I wish I could say, here are the four steps for every situation. But it's not. That's what makes it a tension. That's why we have to navigate it. And if you're just watching with no audio, this looks really weird. But the first thing, how do we navigate the tension? We've already said this multiple times, but that's through sensitivity. And so let's come back to John chapter 8. And here's the whole story. It says, the teachers of the law and the Pharisees brought a woman caught in adultery. And the word caught, the Greek word that is used there, means like literally in the act. She was ripped out of bed with someone that was not her husband. They made her stand before the group and said to Jesus. So like already this is like a messed up situation. Like, yes, that's inappropriate. But they didn't say, hey, Jesus, can we come privately and talk to this young lady here? They're like, let's bring her out here. And she's probably not wearing much. She's probably extremely humiliated at this point. But she should be because of her sin. Then they said, teacher, this woman was caught in the act of adultery. And again, that phrase, in the act of, if you know what that means, that's what it means. In the act of adultery. And they say, in the law, Moses commanded us to stone such women. Meaning, pick up stones and kill her. That's what the law said. So, Jesus, what do you say? Huh? Because they were enemies of Jesus. And it says right here, they were using this question as a trap in order to have a basis for accusing him. Like, this will be it. Because if he says we should disobey the law, well, then, of course, no one should listen to him. No Jewish person should follow this Jewish rabbi who's telling us to ignore the law. And, of course, if he goes on the other side and says, well, it's not a big deal. Well, clearly, if he says stone her, clearly he's not the loving person that everyone thinks he is. It says then, but Jesus bent down and started to write on the ground with his finger. No one knows what he was writing. There's been a bunch of thoughts. Maybe he was writing down the sins of all the people in that room, in that area. And he's just writing. He's kind of ignoring them. He's down here doing this thing. And it says, when they kept on questioning him, he straightened up and said to them, let any of you who is without sin be the first to throw the stone at her. He's like, okay. So, I mean, if you're perfect and this woman is a sinner and you're not a sinner, then by all means, kill her. And then he stooped down and wrote on the ground again. And the story continues that this, those who heard began to go away one at a time, the older ones first, until only Jesus was left with the woman still standing there. Jesus straightened up and asked her, "Woman, where are they? Has no one condemned you? Because the law clearly said that she should be stoned." "No one, sir," she said. And there's it's a really cool thing. I've said this before. If you look through the Bible when God asks a question, it's usually not because he doesn't know the answer. It's never not because he doesn't know the answer. It's usually an opportunity for someone to respond. God says to Adam and Eve, "Where are you in the garden?" It wasn't because God, "They're lost, where are they?" It's because it was giving them an opportunity to fess up, an opportunity to own up to it. She says, "No one, sir." Now, here's the deal. The law says she should be stoned to death. Jesus said over here on the grace side, "All right, let's do it this way. If you're without sin, you go ahead and stone her." We now have a real tension because we know that none of the Pharisees and religious leaders were sinless. There happens to, unfortunately for this woman, there happens to be a person in this story right now who is without sin. Jesus. And yet he says, "Then neither do I condemn you." And that's the like, "Oh, that's great, Jesus, that's awesome. I'm not going to judge you. You guys live however you want, do whatever you want. It's all good. We're all happy. But going to hell." And Jesus says, "Now go and leave your life of sin. Stop sinning." He speaks the truth. Like, yes, I'm not going to condemn you, but you need to change. You need to address this in your life. And so Jesus was sensitive. He knew it was a trap. He knew what was going on. He's God. He knew the whole thing. But here he was sensitive to the situation, and that's how he responded, with grace and truth, both. And I love this passage. This is a passage that our elders have used to navigate some of the tensions that we have to deal with. Is how do we respond to situations that we're confronted with? How do we deal with this? Do we do grace? Do we do truth? Or do we do some kind of a balance of the two? So here are some things that we can do for navigating the tension. The first thing is consider the relationship. Now we're getting practical. You taste it. What do we do here? Okay, first thing is, what is the relationship? What is the relationship that you have with that person? How are you connected to them? Proverbs 27:6 says this: "Wounds from a friend can be trusted, but an enemy multiplies kisses." And what we're talking about here with the relationship is, what is your connection to them? If you know them, if they're a friend of yours, if they're a brother or sister in Christ, if they're a family member, you probably are in a spot where your relationship allows you to say, "You know what? I'm going to say a hard thing, but it's because I love you. And I'm going to step over here and be in the truth area of this tension. Because I see what you're doing, or I saw what happened, or I heard about the situation, or you offended me in this way. And I'm going to speak truth because I have a relationship with you that, you know, not that we ever want to hear it." I mean, I would say the person that I am, aside from Jesus, most intimate with on every level, don't get all upset about that word, is my wife. And I know that she speaks truth to me. And I know that I don't want to hear it. But I know I need it. And she does it in love. And so your relationship, you know, we have to recognize that sometimes friends are going to wound us. But it's not for the sake of hurting us. It's for the sake of correcting us. And so your relationship might determine that. You know, we talked last week about the difference between serving. When do we serve someone? Do we speak to them? And if you don't know a person, they're not going to care what you have to say about their sin. And so in that situation, okay, I don't know this person, and I know they've done something wrong. They've offended me. They've hurt me. They've hurt someone else. Maybe here's where we need to just extend grace and have them go, "Why would you do this? I don't deserve it."
because I'm not going to condemn you. And then maybe that leads to an opportunity to speak the truth. So your relationship might be a part of it. Sometimes your title gives you some latitude that that a relationship wouldn't. If your title is teacher and you're a teacher of students, then you have a title there that does give you some latitude. And I'm not talking about, like, what are the rules in the school system. I'm not saying that. But it just, people expect you to tell them what to do. If your title is coach, nobody's like, hey, the coach told me I need to kick the ball in a different way. This is so dumb. I hate this coach. Who do you think he is? I'm quitting this team. No, that's the coach. That's what a coach does. Your boss. I quit my job. My boss made me work. But that's, you know, you might not even have a relationship with that person, but their title gives them that. And there's definitely something, I mean, I know Chris and I have talked about this before. Like, when you add the title pastor, it messes everything up in terms of relationships. Because as soon as people hear that that's my title, they get weird. That's one side of it. But the other side of it, people come to me and they're like, your title is pastor, so I'm assuming you know all the answers. And I definitely don't. But I have come to recognize in my 46 years of life that people come to me and they actually kind of want me to speak the truth. So my title gives me that opportunity. I would still do it in love, but they want to hear that. They're not going to me because they want me to make them feel good. They can go to plenty of people. They can just post it online. And I'd be like, oh, it's okay, girl. It's okay, hon. So maybe your title. So maybe that's how you navigate, is the relationship. What is your relationship to that person? Is it a relationship that says, you know what, there's really no alternative here but grace? Maybe it's a relationship that says, no, I can speak truth here. Maybe you do have a good relationship, but it's time to extend grace because you've been speaking truth. I'm just saying it's a tension you navigate, but consider your relationship to that person. The second option is consider the person. Consider the person. Who are they? What is their story? Over in Luke chapter 12, Jesus is telling this story about this this master that has many servants, and he shares a few things there in the first couple of verses. But he says, and a servant who knows what the master wants but isn't prepared and doesn't carry out those instructions will be severely punished. So he says, like, you know, if you're a servant, or if you're an employee and you're working for the boss, and the boss was clear, I'm going to be going out for the rest of the afternoon. When I come back, I want you to accomplish these five things. You know what you are supposed to do. And if the boss comes back and you haven't done any of those things, you're probably going to be fired or reprimanded or written up or whatever, beaten to a pulp. That would be an inappropriate job. You should probably quit at that point. But whatever it is, there's an expectation there. But then he says, but with someone who does not know and then does something wrong will be punished only lightly. And I don't know, you know, what your experience is. One of my kids has just started a job recently, and I'd be willing to bet that he has messed things up in his couple of weeks on the job. But I'm pretty sure, well, I know he still has a job. I'm pretty sure that if he were to mess something up, and I'm not saying he did. I mean, he's perfect. But his boss would be like, oh, that's cool. You're new. You don't understand how that works yet. You're not familiar with the way that works. And that's the way it works. Now, if he had been there for 10 years and messed up on something, he'd be like, you've been here for 10 years. What's the deal? Why are you not doing it that way? And so Jesus ends by saying, when someone has been given much, much will be required in return. And when someone has been entrusted with much, even more will be required. Jesus is saying, you know, the person that has much is going to be expected with more. And so when you are dealing with this tension, what is that person? What's their story? Are they a person that grew up outside of the church and has never been in the doors of a church and has never really interacted with Jesus, the Bible, or any real Christ followers? Why would we expect them to look like us and act like us? They don't know any better. And that's why I'm not going to get into it, but like, you can't legislate Christianity. I don't know if I offended you there, but we can't pass enough laws so that the world out there acts like us. It's not an issue of laws. It's an issue of God changing their heart. So we can't look at people out there and expect them to act like us in here. And so we need to consider that. But however, on the other side, maybe there's someone that, like, dude, you should know better. You should know better. And maybe that's the time you speak truth. Like, look, we've talked about this so many times. You know that this is how you should be acting. The extending grace, it's probably gone now because you've had, not that you've had your shot, but you'd know better. And that's the issue here, is what is the person? Are they someone that, you know, they don't know any better? So extend grace. You're not going to respond to your teenager that repeatedly violates curfew the same way as you would to your two-year-old toddler, you know, that accidentally throws some food on the floor, or on purpose throws some food on the floor. Why? Because they're a toddler. They don't know any better yet. And maybe if your teenager was throwing food on the floor, you would respond that way. But it's consider the person. What's their background? What's their story? And that goes into it too. Like, we are so quick to jump to conclusions, and it doesn't make it right, but, you know, you run into someone that just seems to be really angry, and they do something, they offend you, and you're so mad. But what you didn't know is that morning they found out that their mom was diagnosed with cancer. It would affect their day. Like, there's so much to the story. So consider the person before we determine, is it a time of grace? Is it a time of truth? The third thing we should do is consider the response. How is that person responding to the situation? Are they just going, I don't care, I hate you and you're stupid? Okay, maybe we're going to talk a little more truth right now. But maybe, hey, Dad, I'm really sorry. I so messed up. Maybe it's time to extend some grace. And there's this passage, I'm not going to read it because it's long, but in Luke chapter 7, there's the story about this woman that comes. Jesus is at the home of a Pharisee, and this woman comes in. She's an adulterous woman. She's a woman of the street, whatever you want to call her. And she comes in, and she has a super expensive perfume. She breaks it and uses it to anoint Jesus' feet. She pours it on his feet, her tears. She's wiping his feet. She's cleaning his feet, basically, with her hair and with this perfume. And the Pharisees are like, oh, if Jesus knew what this woman had done, he would not let her touch him. Yeah. And so then, in the next slide there, it says, then Jesus turned to the guy and says, do you see this woman? Like, you're Pharisees, you know better. And I've come into your house, and you haven't done one thing to humble yourself before me. But this woman has come in, and the moment she walked in the door, she has been down on her knees, humbly washing my feet, in an attitude of contrition. Was that a good word? In an attitude of humility, in an attitude of brokenness. And Jesus says, this woman that's here washing my feet with her hair is in a far better place than you are by standing up there and looking superior. And so when it comes to a situation, we need to realize, like, what is their response? That might help us navigate. You know, sometimes you don't need to kick someone when they're down if they truly know the situation. Hey, let's extend grace. And as you see through the Gospels, I mean, Jesus uses grace to turn hearts. Jesus uses grace to turn lifestyles. Maybe on the other side of the equation, though, this person, their response is, oh, I'm so sorry, I won't do it again. Well, that's what you said yesterday, and the day before, and the day before that. And I'm willing to bet that you're sorry, but what are we going to do here? What truth are we going to speak to fix this situation? How are we going to actually deal with it, rather than just being like, it's all right. It's forgiven, but we need to deal with it. And so the response of the person is something we should consider. And then finally, you're tasting the food. What are your emotions? What are your feelings in this moment? I can tell you this. If you've got a head cold and you're tasting food and trying to decide if it tastes right, I don't know how you get a head cold, but for me, like, it's all messed up. You can't smell, you can't taste. And so that would not be a good judge of whether it needs a little more salt or a little more pepper. Because you're tainted at that moment. And so when it comes to dealing with a situation, when it comes to whether we're extending grace or speaking truth, we need to take a look in the mirror and say, where am I? What's going on in my heart? What's going on in my life? What are my emotions? What is my attitude in this situation? Paul writes to the church in Ephesus, and he says, therefore each of you must put off falsehood and speak truthfully to your neighbor. So don't lie to them. Speak truthfully, for we're all members of one body. They need to hear it. You need to speak the truth. He said this earlier. But he also adds, in your anger, do not sin. Don't let the sun go down when you're angry, and do not give the devil a foothold. He said, if we're responding, if we're speaking truth out of anger, we're messing it up. We're tainting it. So we need to kind of take stock and say, okay, am I responding this way because I am so angry at them? your perspective is tainted. Maybe you need to step back and say, okay, I'm really angry right now. I need to cool down. Then say, is this truth or is this grace? Maybe you're like, you know what? I'm just tired of dealing with them. I hate them. Fine, whatever. Like, now you need to take stock. You're in a bad spot if you're just being lazy, that you don't actually want to say the things that need to be said. So we just need to navigate that by looking at our own emotions and where we are in that situation. So navigating the tension is through sensitivity. Consider the relationship. What is your relationship with that person? Consider the person. Where are they in their walk with Jesus? Are they anywhere or are they nowhere? That could all affect how we do it. And maybe, just to be clear, maybe they don't know Jesus and you're like, let me speak the truth to you. Let me tell you about Jesus. Let me talk about the hard things so that you won't just walk around happy and helly. Thing now. Then consider the response. How are they responding to the situation? That might be something that says, oh, okay, I'm going to speak truth because maybe they want the truth. Maybe they're like, ah, I don't care. I mean, so you just need to, how are they responding to that? And then, of course, finally, consider your emotions. What are you bringing into this? How are you responding to this? What's going on in your heart that's affecting your discernment here with navigating this tension? Because sensitivity navigates the tension between extending grace and speaking truth. And it's just a matter of being sensitive to that situation, to that moment, and then being sensitive to the next moment and the next situation. Is this time for me to extend grace or speak truth? And we can't say I'm only going to speak truth because we've missed the message of the Gospels. And we can't say over here I'm only going to extend grace because we've missed the message of the Gospels. We have to be willing to say, okay, how do we navigate this tension? Let's pray. Father, thank you so much for your word. Thank you that Jesus himself, that the Son of God embodies fully grace and fully truth. And that he is an example of how to navigate this tension. And I pray that you would give us the wisdom to do that. As we've been wrapping up every week, knowing, God, that you promise that if we ask for wisdom, you will provide it. And we just pray for wisdom when it comes to navigating the tension between grace and truth, extending grace, speaking truth. Help us to know when it is time to say what needs to be said. Help us to know when it's time to just extend that grace and look on someone with love. And I guess love should be covering all of it as well. But just help us to see that and know the best way to do that. Not so that we can have the easiest response, not even so that they're happy or they like the response, but so that we can see people turn to you, so that we can see your glory through our interactions with other people. Thank you for everything you've done for us. In Jesus' name, amen.